Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello, hello. Thank you for coming back to listen to us again. So this week, Maggie and I have had a question, which I'm very chuffed about the question simply because it was something I wanted to talk about as well, which is, Maggie, I'd like to ask you about the woman before Eve, if that's what she was. Please tell us about Lilith.
I'll tell you everything I know about Lilith, but could you tell me what you know already first?
Okay, so what I know is that there seems to be the most extraordinary range of differing opinions about what she is. Everything from she was a woman made first, made equal to Adam out of the same dust as Adam, which is apparently, I think I'm right in saying, the one and only thing that's actually written in the Bible about her. But maybe not, probably not, I'd say, by the looks on your face. Almost certainly not, in fact. So the other thing is that some say that she wasn't a woman at all, and that Lilith and a demon called Samael were born, in inverted commas, or made from dust at the same time as Adam and Eve. And like Adam and Eve were kind of entwined, or no, not like Adam and Eve, but more like Adam and the Adam story of Lilith, that Lilith and Samael were made of the same dust, as it were, born entwined, and then, I think, were from the very beginning always demons. But then again, you get a whole load more kind of divergence in what does it mean to be a demon. So Samael, to some, has and always was the devil, and Lilith is therefore the kind of arch-enchantress. I know that some, either, you know, groups of people with all kinds of differing opinions have taken her on as like the most ancient feminine force in Christianity, for everything from totally brilliant, she was there first and Christianity is therefore simply, look, here's the proof, one big long misogynistic tale of you know, demonizing the first woman, to actually this is the kind of birth of evil. So yeah, what I know is that I really don't know, and that I'd very much love to know. Actually, first of all, my first question is, what is actually written either in the Dead Sea Scrolls or in the you know, the books as we have them, if the Christians are people of the books, what is actually written in the book about Lilith?
Firstly, there's nothing in Christianity about Lilith.
Oh, really?
Nothing at all. There's one possible mention in the Bible where, in the book of Isaiah, where he refers to the screech owl, which is the Lilitu.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really complex. I'm going to try and make it as simple as I can. But basically, it's all utter bollocks. Because the Lilith we know comes from a book called The Alphabet of Ben Sira, which was, it's a Jewish text, and forgive me because I didn't get advance notice of the question, I can't remember whether it's 14th century or slightly earlier, but it's late.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells the story about how Lilith, Adam's first wife, would not go underneath him for sex.
Oh yes, yes,
would
yes,
not
yes.
submit to him. So of course, yeah, she's become a feminist icon for that. But the unravelling of it, I wrote a whole chapter on this in A Woman's Worth, The Divine Feminine in the Hebrew Testament. I found it absolutely extraordinary and really frustrating looking at all the misinformation. It's fake news.
Wow.
Lilith is fake news, and it is spread to, it was The stories about Lilith began at the time of the Babylonian exile, when the Jews had been thrown out of their country and the first temple had fallen. If you remember, we talked about the first temple, mm-hmm. which honoured the divine feminine as well as the divine masculine. But that was thrown over, and when everybody went to Babylon, there were two sets of people who were there. We got caught into slavery because we didn't end the first temple soon enough because it was corrupt, and we got taken into slavery because we ended the first temple. You know, it's nothing different from today, the polarity. And Lilith, the legend of Lilith, sprung up while they were away to demonize the feminine from the first temple. And it is a complete misinterpretation of mystical texts. It's taking the Bible literally, which we're always talking about as being a big mistake.
So is she actually mentioned in the Bible? No. Does the word Lilith come up in the Bible?
Only Lilithu, the screech owl. That's all. That's the only mention in the book of Isaiah.
And what about the other books? Is she there in any of the others?
I don't think so, but I don't know. I mean, I did not find any evidence of her in Dead Sea Scrolls or anything, but I couldn't say absolutely definitively. But here is how I think the mistake got to be. And we talked about this before. Genesis, an awful lot of the Hebrew Testament was written twice. It was written by one author we call E because he wrote about the Elohim, and one author we call J because he wrote about Yahweh or Jehovah.
Yeah.
And those two texts were melded later on and then edited. So we don't have the original text for a start.
Right.
We have a text that's set in stone. And in the text that's set in stone, there's still enough magic and mystery for you to interpret. But in Genesis, the Elohim, this is the aspect of the divine, which is intersexual, let's call it, but primarily feminine, the great mother. Male and female created she them both. So the concept of humanity, this is the concept before it comes to earth, because Genesis tells the story of creation in layers. And there's the concept, then the formation, and then the physical of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the story of Lilith comes from the concept, which is male and female created him, he, them both, which is the androgynous human being. The original androgynous being. And I think you'll find in most cultures that there is an original androgynous being. I've been reading some Joseph Campbell about this. And then later it says it was not good for the human to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
So God said, I will create a helpmeet for the human. And of course, all the genders have been added in, and we don't know if they were there to start with. So therefore, Eve is created there, and she's called Eve because Adam calls her Eve because she's the first woman. So then everybody went, well, hang on a minute, why is Adam alone if male and female she created them both? So they started working with why is that, and they didn't have the mystical knowledge that this was layers of creation. And we all do this. We have an idea, I could do a workshop. And then we fill it in. What kind of workshop? Where's it going to be? How are we going to do it? And that's what Genesis is actually all about. I've got an idea. Humanity. Oh, a being. Oh, how about genders? It's a misunderstanding to start with, but it was used very neatly to demonize the feminine and also to ostracize external gods from other cultures, which, of course, happened in Judaism, happens in Christianity, happens in Islam, happens in everything. In that there were other gods in the Babylonian, Sumerian, all sorts of places who were mother gods or sexual gods or part of the pantheon of gods. And one of them was called Ardat Lilitu. And there were all sorts of other dames as well, which was similar to Lilitu or Lilith. So the screech owl and that, it's all been sort of melded in to make fake news, to make the feminine demonic. And also the idea, the Samael aspect. Everybody assumes Samael does mean Satan, but in the mystical tradition, Samael is the angel of death. He's not Satan. He's the angel of. His name, I believe, means the poison of God. But poison, as we both know, because we've dealt with herbs, poisons are remedies as well as destructive. Absolutely. So Samael is actually the great no, enough. This is over. And to corrupt Samael into Satan, which is a different name, is another aspect of demonization of some way, and I'm not quite sure why. But Lilith is said, the legend is, that Adam wanted Lilith to go underneath him during sex, and she wouldn't, so she flew. She spoke the ineffable name of God and flew away and joined forces with the demonic forces led by Lucifer, who'd already decided to break away from the divine because they wouldn't bow to humanity. Mm-hmm. Aren't we so lovely arrogant that we have a legend that they have to bow to humanity? And Lilith was then bitterly jealous of Adam's second wife and vowed to destroy all her children. And oh, so yes, three, there are this. Emblems of three angels. I can't remember the names, but it all began with S, and one of them, Semenov, were placed in ancient nurseries to ward off Lilith, who swore to kill Eve's children. And do you know the word lullaby actually comes from one of the words for Lilith?
Okay.
So a lullaby was originally a song to protect your child from the forces of evil.
Wow, I love knowing things like that.
Isn't that just fascinating?
So this story, the one you just related, has no relationship to anything in the Bible.
No.
But comes from the alphabet of
Ben Sira,
around about 14-ish something. We think 14. Maybe.
It was talked about before. He wrote it down.
Right.
So he sort of set it in stone, as we keep saying is not a good idea, really.
Indeed.
But the mystical interpretation, and the one that I go with, is actually that if we go look at the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, which is the structure, the skeleton of the perennial tradition that works with any tradition, the idea is that the divine is at the top, and that the first Sephira is known as Chokhmah, is the place where Adam stands. But actually, each of these Sephirot is a sphere which holds the light and transmits it on. So it receives it first and then transmits it. Yeah. And the yin is the receptive, so mm-hmm. that would be Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
And the yang would be Adam, because he passes it on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact, if you look at the legend according to the mystical tradition that underlies it, if there were a Lilith, she was the firstborn. She received the word of God. She was the nearest to God, because Adam did not know the ineffable name of God. No. Only Lilith did. So there's two ways of looking at it. You can say that she wouldn't bow to Adam, she wouldn't be subservient to Adam, and hey, she's a feminist icon. Or you can look at it from the point of view that when I met the Dalai Lama, he bowed first. It is not an act of subjugation to bow first.
No.
It is an act of respect.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd look at the legend in another way, in that it may be that there is no legend, but let's look at it from the point of view that the feminine was not willing to pass on her knowledge. And that, for me, would make it slightly, not demonic, but a problem.
Mm.
That she wasn't going to pass on the knowledge. But it had nothing to do with sex, because in Berea, the spiritual world, with the concept of humanity, there wasn't any sex.
Okay, I'm still intrigued, though. Why you're putting this story into the Tree of Life as if it was a real story, at the same time as saying that it's fake news?
I am, because I'm trying to interpret a story that has come to be a myth. And a myth has a perennial truth in it.
Yes.
Any myth that has taken off like Lilith is a living entity.
Mm-hmm.
And what is interesting to me is that the Lilith myth still fits the tree. So it's a relevant myth, but it's just how you interpret it. You need to do something, don't you?
Yes, sorry, I thought I turned that thing off, and I've just realised that it's making an enormous amount of noise, which means I didn't successfully turn it off. There we go, I've turned it off. Apologies for the interruption.
It's two mates chatting in your office.
It's true. Okay, amazing. I am very, what am I? I really love it that on the one hand you're able to sit there and go, well, it's fake news and it's not founded on anything, but at the same time can turn it into a teaching.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, for a story to last that long, it must have some resonance in truth.
Yes.
And so it might as well become a teaching
yes,
story.
Yes, and it's become a story about trying to suppress the feisty woman.
Mm.
And there have been many times.
Feminine.
Which?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been used very powerfully. But I just want to use it in a way that says, okay, there is this legend too, but if she refused to go under him for sex, well, that's not possible. That's absolutely not that's the story of the origin of the story means it was not two living human beings on a planet having sex. This was pre Garden of Eden. Mm. So that's out, and I don't accept any of that. But the legend is important because it does tell us the nature of the feminine, which is that it is the first to receive in anybody. The yin is the receptive aspect. And all of Kabbalistic teaching is that you receive divine grace and you pass it on.
Yeah.
You pass it on. You don't use it to stand up and go, you're not having this, you're not having that, because that's masculine. That's sacred, that's corrupt masculine. Mm. So I still think it's a useful myth. But I do get a little bit when people go, that feminist, you know, I'm not feminist. I just sort of go, yeah, you're just having more of the masculine go, yeah, I can see that you married a demon.
So remind me, just because I love, I'll never hear this often enough. I remember in one of the very first conversations we ever had, you said that actually the devil in proper, in the Old Testament, isn't there.
No, there doesn't exist. The tester. Satan is the tester.
So, but is Satan even there? Does Satan exist?
Yes, he's in the Book of Job.
Okay. What is he in the Book of Job?
There's a wager between God and the tester, Satan, that there is no man on the earth who is holy enough and good enough to continue loving God when severely tested.
Right.
And Job loses everything. He loses his children, his wife, his job, his work, the respect of his community. He loses absolutely everything. And then there's the Job's comforters who come along and say, well, he must have done something wrong. He must have done this. But Job, two things in the Book of Job, which I find really interesting. The first one is that he says, the thing I feared the most has come upon me, which is primary law of attraction. Mm-hmm. Job lived in fear that he would lose everything.
Yeah.
Which, of course, a lot of us are living in now. Mm-hmm. And also Job just held the faith. And I absolutely get that. Job is a good book to read when you are seriously ill. Because when I was really seriously ill and it all seemed to be going horribly wrong, I found I couldn't stop believing. Mm-hmm. You know, isn't this threatening your faith in God that it should happen to you? No, why would it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're supposed to be a nice woman. Well, who knows what a nice woman is? I don't think I am a nice woman, but, you know, I just could, even at the last bit when it just felt like I was totally abandoned and lost, I couldn't stop believing.
Yeah.
And Job is like that. And at the end, everything and more is restored unto him. So the difficulty with that story is there actually a Satan? Is there a devil? No, but there is a testing force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you're going to climb up and tell everybody that what to do from a holy point of view, you're going to have to be tested and checked out and checked out and checked out. And I rather like that. And that's the role that Lucifer or Satan has, the fallen angel, which is the idea, the legend is that he's so jealous of humanity that he tries to stop us getting towards the divine. So he will try and put things in our path all the way.
But is I mean, Lucifer translates, I believe, as the light bringer.
Yes.
And that there endeth what Susie Crockford knows about Lucifer. But I've always found it intriguing, as somebody who somehow or other, through my upbringing, was always clear that the person or the figure that we call Satan was not necessarily the same figure as Lucifer.
No.
But that, if you're going to be a light bringer, one of the things I was brought up with was a totally clear understanding that we wouldn't know diddly squat unless we had something else to compare it with.
Yes.
And that therefore to perceive that which sheds light as evil would be ridiculous, because you can't have, for example, an understanding of what night is unless you have experienced day. You can't have an experience of what utter delicious joy is unless you have experienced its dark, dark sister, grief.
Yes.
And all of those things are, our capacity to experience any of them is in total and utter balance with our capacity to experience their opposite.
Yes, we said the other day, didn't we,
yeah,
that you can't have compassion without grief.
Yeah.
Because you've not experienced, you've got information but no experience.
So surely you can't have conviction without the tester. No. Because you can't know how strongly you believe unless you are tested. And that, again, the whole belief thing is kind of, I don't know. It used to be one of the things I sort of pointed at Christianity and went kind of bah to, about is that this idea that there may be even some saying, or certainly at some point somebody's told me that there is a saying in Christianity that it is a belief, and that you all you have, as it were, is your belief. And that somehow there's no way of knowing.
Yes, we talked about this before. That,
did we?
That okay. Faith is the opposite of certainty.
Right, yes. And that Christianity is a faith.
Yes.
Yes, and now I've completely lost my thread.
No, it's lovely. You've said some amazing stuff. And you've reminded me to say, there is a phrase in Isaiah about Lucifer. And the phrase is, "Oh, how hast thou fallen, O Lucifer, son of morning." Son of the morning star, Venus.
Mm.
And that is the origin of the Lucifer legend, which is that there was the greatest of all archangels, the most beloved of God, would not bow to Adam.
Right.
So we got bowing again, but that was actually would not honour Adam, because Adam could name the animals, this is in the legend, whereas angels can't. Angels not, in the mystical tradition, not being human. Angels mm-hmm. being a formation of light that does a certain job. I mean, you can call a person an angel, of course you can, absolutely, but an actual angel is not an ex-human being. Mm. You can't be an ex-human being. But so the story behind Lucifer is that, yes, Lucifer means the light bearer, but as the tester, he has glamour.
Is Lucifer also the tester?
Yes, so Lucifer and Satan are the same.
Samael.
Yes. Oh. No, Samael is not the tester. Samael is the angel of death. According
yes,
to the
right.
angel
okay.
hierarchy. But they do get mixed up, and it's very easy to mix them up. I understand that. But the whole point of Lucifer is that he fell. He still carries light. And to be perfectly honest, evil cannot succeed unless it presents itself as good.
Really?
Yeah. Because you have to believe that you're doing the right thing. The majority of people who do great evil totally justify it to themselves. And they believe that they're even saviours.
Okay. I can see that how that would be the case with Hitler or Mussolini or whatever. But your yeah. average backstreet murderer, what good do they
oh,
think
Oh, you'd be
doing?
Amazed if you... I just read the latest J.K. Rowling, which is controversial enough as it is. And though I personally found nothing transphobic in it at all. There was a huge amount that was really, really negative about astrology. And as an astrologer, I could be really pissed off about that, but I can't be bothered because I'm quite happy. But moving straightly on about that, yes, a lot of serial killers certainly think that they are ridding the land of the horror of women. And that kind of thing. And they think they're doing a service. And that is highlighted in a horrible way in the book, just to make you aware of how mentally ill these people are. And
wow.
Donald Trump thinks he's doing the right thing. The MAGA
yeah.
Americans think that they're saving the world. There are pictures of right-wing fundamentalist Christians blessing Donald Trump in the office because they think he's going to stop abortion. And what they don't even realise is the problem for right-wing fundamental Americans is that white women having abortion means it's going to be a majority of black and coloured people soon.
Wow.
You know, so the evil will always present itself as attractive, exciting, different, glamorous. And every spiritual teacher is always tested. I wouldn't call myself a great spiritual teacher in any way, shape or form. But my God, are you tested?
Mm-hmm.
Even at the very, very low level that I am running a weekly online Kabbalah group, I will get tested. And I may have mentioned this before, but one of my great teachers, Richard Rohr in New Mexico, prays every day for a humiliation so he can't have false pride. I do not have to do that.
The universe offers you
it
plenty.
It provides it very, very succinctly through my own stupidity or posting something on Facebook or making a silly comment or just anything, you know.
Yeah.
So this whole thing of the light bearer is absolutely true. And I don't know how many times anybody listening has been absolutely dazzled by a really attractive person. only to find that they were really manipulative or going to crush your energy or something like that. Of course, there are lovely, bright people who are absolute enhancements in life. But generally, I found that the mad, bad and dangerous to know men that I've been involved with were glamorous.
So I'm intrigued. I feel like in my own life, I'd love your reflection on this. I'm not sure that I've ever been tested by evil exactly, but I know damn well that on a very regular basis, I'm tested by ego.
Yes.
Is it the same thing?
That's such a good question. Unconscious evil comes from the ego, yes. Conscious evil, which is the really difficult one, comes from the true self. Or even from the corrupted soul. And that is serious stuff. But I don't know if I'd call it evil, but most of our problems come from the ego. And again, in the Kabbalistic teaching, it's really useful because the ego is called Yesod, and the pathway from the ego to the true self at Tiferet is known as the path of honesty.
Mm.
And therefore, every fib is a testing.
Mm.
And as somebody who was a compulsive liar when she was young to protect her mother because she was a codependent, I can see that so easily because you get just tied up in traps. And how easy it is to tell lies and how politicians tell lies and cover them up. And it just, one lie leads to another lie and then another and then another and then a denial and then an accusation of fake news or something like that. Mm. So the path of honesty is where Lucifer is said to wait, because once you've got up the tree of life at the point of Tiferet, you can be in touch with spirit and the divine directly. So the Luciferic energy is to stop you getting there. Because then you'll be clear and you'll be able to see clearly and go, hang on a minute.
So in these post-truth times where lying and clearly, you know, not giving a rat's ass about even whether everyone knows you're lying, and just so many politicians keep seeming to consider themselves completely unaccountable, my kind of theory of existence, if you like, is that if that is one end of the polarities of existence, bearing in mind that everything must have its opposite, there must be somewhere in our world a state of far closer to true self kind of enlightenment, for want of a better word, coming about in humanity. Because, yes. Yeah, do you think so? Do you agree?
Yeah, these are very challenging times, but they're here to wake us up. You know, the Lucifer is the most useful angel there is, because he's going, squash, no, don't do this, no, you can't do that. Oh, but obey me, do this, do that. Binge watch for Netflix. Oh, I'm sorry, I keep going on about binge watching Netflix, but it's just so addictive, you know, but it stops you doing anything creative or whatever. Mm. And I've lost my thread. What was the question?
did you think that if on the one hand we've got all this murk that is so very overt, yeah, that do you agree that, so in my version of reality, if you like, everything is constantly in a kind of lemniscatic state of polarity, and that therefore if there is a huge pile of mouldering shit at one end, there will be something exquisite at the other.
At the other, yes, there's Christ consciousness. Not devoted to Jesus, as we said before, but the Christ is the all nurturing, growing aspect, the very feminine aspect, in fact, that is also present. And that could be also translated to Shekinah, which is the presence of God in the world.
Shekinah. The presence of God in the world.
Yes, that's the divine feminine, the presence of God in the world, also known as the daughter of the voice. So we have Lucifer and Shekinah as sort of partners at the other end, and Shekinah waits for you beyond Tiferet on the pathway up to Keter.
Up to where he who?
Keter, which is the crown, which is the Christ consciousness.
Okay. So in that map, Shekinah is underneath? Is there a status thing in that, Christ consciousness?
Shekinah's further up the tree towards the light.
Right.
Shekinah hasn't fallen.
And Christ is the light.
Yes.
Christ consciousness is the
light. I would say
which is
so.
Not the same at all as saying any Jesus-y man.
No.
Is,
no. The Christ consciousness, any person working from their crown chakra is working from the crown consciousness, Christ consciousness. But I don't know about you, but I can't stay there more than about 5 minutes maximum. You know, I can get sort of somewhere along there, but you can get to that point in meditation when you think, oh, and then you realise you've got there and you drop down again.
That's why I don't like meditation and do love journeying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And for some of us, that contemplation, devotion, or active meditation, we have to find the one that really works for us.
Yeah,
some people
totally.
Meditate walking.
Yeah.
Some people sing. Some people listen to things. I tend to do a mix of them. I found devotion, you know, sitting in meditation by far the most difficult, which is why I try and do it most often, because of the discipline of stilling the mind. But it's all incredibly simple and incredibly complex, in that you're absolutely right. If there is a maximum darkness, there is a maximum light. And the road for all human beings is to walk to the light, not to walk away from the darkness, because that means you look round and look at it and it can tempt you back, but to walk doggedly towards the light.
I have to say that I really dislike that metaphor.
Fine, give me a better one.
I'm not sure that I can. I would love to know what you think of why I dislike the metaphor.
Because so the reason, word darkness?
No, so the reason I don't like that as a metaphor, and never has, is that to me, the darkness is utterly, utterly kind of interwoven with the womb, sacred feminine, the void, the no thing from which everything comes. The darkness is the night, is outer space, is the within. There are so many things to love about the darkness.
I hear you absolutely. You're totally and utterly right. And in fact, the left-hand side, the yin side of the tree, is the darkness, and the right-hand side is light in that respect. So let's say walk away from the glamour into the true light.
That's much better. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Because again, it's this language thing. Yeah, I read stuff in books and I learn and I try to understand them. But it's only when I articulate them that somebody like you can go, wrong language, honey. Think about it. And that's what debate is all about. What do you actually mean by that language?
Yeah. I mean, I find the language of darkness and light, to me, it's really quite dangerous.
Yes.
Because of the way that it does. You know, the language of darkness and light could absolutely explain some of the entrenched racism.
Yeah.
You know, if black's bad and white's good, oh, well, you know.
Yeah, and it's all so entrenched. And forgive me if I said this before, but it's a recent discovery. We may have said it even on last week's, but I think it bears repeating again. I am never going again to say I was date raped at college. I'm going to say a man called John date raped me. Because the language of she was raped or she was this or it's all passive, as if it's all to do with the person being at fault somewhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That nobody else has to take the responsibility for it. So this whole language thing is huge.
Yeah, no, I'm reasonably confident we did not say that last week. And I completely concur with you that the language thing is huge, as we have rattled on about that repeatedly. Yeah. But also, the accountability thing is massive. And that to say, yes, you know, John date raped me rather than I was date raped, it turns it around in all kinds of different ways.
Yeah.
But as much as anything else, what it does is makes John accountable rather than you being accountable, and somehow in some bizarre and twisted way. And it hopefully creates a culture whereby those who do things like date rape don't imagine that they're going to get away with it.
Yeah, because it's all so subtle.
Yeah.
It's so subtle.
I'm kind of guessing we've run out of time.
Run out of time.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, but thank you for the question, and I hope I didn't make a complete pig's ear of the answer.
No, I'm very sure you didn't.
The wonderful thing about these legends, for me, is that you can put everything on the Tree of Life. You can do gardening, farming, making a cake, everything like that. So you can actually hang a legend on this skeleton and go, how did that form? What's missing from it and why? And I just find that so fascinating.
Me too. Yeah.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you again
next
week.
Thanks for listening.